dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway. And of course, it's episode 216. And I'm in the booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. But first, I gotta let you know, it is week 3 of our Queer Horror Month, and we're also at the tail end of the Max Fun Block Party, a celebration of the Max Fun community. If you heard us on our mini episode with the McElroy brothers, or you stumbled upon our shows by some other means, and you're joining us for the first time, I want to be the first to say welcome. This is like the Disneyland of movies, and I'm Mickey Mouse in a suit, big ol' ears. We are Maximum Film, a movie show that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes. You know, we all have fun, differing opinions. We got a whole bunch of experts and me. So you got Alonzo Duralde, star critic. He got opinions and they're good. And a lot of people like them. We got Drea Clark, star programmer, queen of the Midwest. She has a heart of gold. Everyone who talks to me about Drea is like, Hiffy, I like Drea. And I'm like, of course you do. All right. And then there's me, a comedian, actor, writer, who seemingly loves a lot of movies, except when they're racist and bad. So that's it. That's what you signed up for, and I hope you're ready to lock in. And we have a stellar show for you today. We're talking about a great thriller, psychological thriller, Lyle. And of course, we do have someone in the booth as a guest and a good friend and super hilarious, but I'm gonna just get to the part where I introduce you to everyone. So, Alonzo Duralde, the Christmas daddy himself, I gotta ask you, what's good?
Well, Iffy, I'm glad you mentioned my Christmas zaddiness, because we're kicking back off next week. The Christmas movie minute is back
already? Next.
Yes,
you're right.
Tonight, when this show drops, is the first of the 40 Hallmark Christmas movies. So next episode, I begin my minute-long weekly recaps of all the ridiculous Christmas nonsense that I watch every week. You're welcome. But what's good for right now, since we are on the subject of queer horror, the folks at Frameline in San Francisco have a really cool thing going on this weekend called Frameline Fangs, and it is a little mini festival of horror movies for you to enjoy from Friday through Sunday. It's 3 feature films. It's 6 shorts. They're all queer. They're all horror. And wherever you are, in the U.S., I guess, I don't know how these things work for the online film festivals, but if you go to frameline.org/fangs, you get to see these cool movies. So if we have whetted your appetite for queer horror with this month-long series that we're doing, check out what they've got going on at Frameline. Frameline.org/fangs, a cool international selection of LGBTQ horror movies from around the world.
Okay, well, Alonzo, speaking of getting that appetite wet, if someone is, we got a lot of new listeners coming in, they're probably checking it out, but maybe they got a wet appetite for maybe some literature on Christmas movies. Can you give us a quick rundown of where? I can't rack my brain to see where I might read up on that.
What a wacky coincidence that you would bring it up. My brand new book, I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, which I've written with the host of the Deck the Hallmark podcast, comes out this Tuesday, October 26th.
Aww,
it is a guide to it's reviews of more than 100 Hallmark Christmas movies, plus kind of like a mini history of Hallmark and TV, the story of how the Deck the Hallmark podcast came together, recipes if you want to throw your own Hallmark watching party. There's a bingo card in there. There's a foreword by a hunk of Hallmark, Christopher Palaha, who you might know from Wonder Woman 1984. It's got everything. It's a really fun film guide if you like Hallmark Christmas movies, or if you hate them, because one of the hosts of that show also hates them, and he will walk you through how much he despises each and every one of these movies. It's also a great gift for that relative in your life who really digs Hallmark, and you're like, what do I get this person? Get them I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
Nice. Ooh. Everyone's got one of those people.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you know, in the time that Alonzo explained that, I was able to place my pre-order and follow him as the author on Amazon. Fuck Jeff Bezos, but I got to say, he gets me what I need. He gets me what I need. Speaking of getting me what I need, someone who is always getting me what I need and warming my heart, the queen of the Midwest herself, Drea Clark, what's good?
in the most lovingly platonic and respectful of ways. Yes, indeed.
Nothing makes me feel sexier than my friends scrambling to say that we have a platonic relationship.
No, no, it's more because you said, I always get you what you need. And it sounds like I'm like scrambling around behind you, like, ooh, iffy. When in reality, if I'm scrambling around behind you, it would be to explain to you that whetted your appetite is WHETT, and wet is to sharpen. But, you know, he wants to talk about wet things, and who am I to stop him? Oh my God, you guys, I finally have a segue, because my what's good is my humidifier. And it's a wet thing.
Let's go. Woo-hoo! Yes.
Oh, it's all coming together. But yeah, it's humidifier season, and my what's good is maybe not as beneficial to everyone as Alonzo's, but maybe it is. Maybe you should all be investing in humidifiers and you'll sleep better. You'll get less cold. Mm. You won't be so dry. Your nose won't be weird and bloody and crusty in the morning. You know, I'm just saying you might lead a better life. And you guys know all I really want is to end up like the character of Cassandra in Doctor Who, who's just like this stretched yes. out thing of skin that's just misted all the time.
You're just skin, Cassandra. Lipstick and skin.
And my humidifier gives me a strong, constant misting, which I really like.
Well, yeah. I just saw an ad where Vicks VapoRub now comes in like a roll-on stick or whatever, which I'm very excited about that technology. So that coupled with a humidifier, do your worst cold and flu season.
I mean, how could people not say we're sexy? Yeah. Humidifier and Vicks, call me.
The finger on the pulse of the young people.
For sure.
Okay. Well, I'm funny, and I know someone else who is funny. And of course, I had to say other words because I did not want to say speaking of moist.
Yes. You circled back to it, but yeah, you really tried.
Because in case people were like, if he usually has smooth transitions, so close. Yet he was chunky as he like very physically stepped away. But I had to be like, this is why I'm doing it, because I got a track record of having the smoothest transitions in the podcast game. As soon as iHeartRadio has that, you know, on the podcast awards, just know we gonna get it. All right. So next up, we have my friend, comedy writer, Monica Vasadani. What's good?
Well, first of all, I'm offended that you just called me out as dry. That's how I'm going to take that. But it's jacket weather, and I look really good in jackets.
Nice.
That's my what's good. Like, I have jacket drip.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's a very specific.
Layers. Yeah.
Like, I'm a softer individual. So, like, I look better in a wrap. You put me in a jacket and it's very much, no matter how worn it is, it looks like I just took it off a hanger. Do you know what I mean? Like, that thing of, oh, that body doesn't want to have a jacket on it. So I appreciate people who pull them off well.
My like ideal body type for myself is hanger. Like I just want to be angular and pointy, and like I don't want to seem like I give good hugs. So the corners work for me.
Right, I look like a hug. So yeah, it's tough for me. Yeah.
Until I reach the age where I can really make caftan work, I have to kind of go with unzipped hoodie and hope for the best.
Yes, I cannot wait till you hit caftan.
I know,
age,
I'm ready
though.
For that. Yeah, uh-huh. No, it's that's the thing. Is I was just talking about this the other day. I'm like, well, first off, the kids have taken me over. And like I'm deep in the TikToks, and there's this new trend where all these kids do like their different outfits, and it's super cool and exciting. And it's because they got layers, because in California it's just shorts and shirts. So I am also all about that.
Is there anything else good with you? What's good? Dang it!
You know, we all can't be the smoothest transitions in the game. You know, if you
get, you're never going to get that iHeartRadio thing with me here.
What's good with me is, as y'all know, last week I was so sad to miss out on a very horny movie because I was in Austin, Texas, holding it down. And I got to say, what's good? I guess it's like a what's all right, what's good, and what isn't good. I don't know, but like, if you know, Austin's like a pretty purple state, and like Greg Abbott is a pretty big piece of shit. So like, it's so interesting in being a in that town where like some places are like, you definitely got to wear the mask. And some places are like, why are you wearing a mask? And I got to say, the hotel I was at, it was always filled with state troopers. There definitely was a moment where me and my friend Fiona walked down and like they stopped talking. I was like, oh, that was a racist conversation. That was like, just so you know, and just for your own safety, white people, people of non-color, like if you get silent when a person of color walks up and you're having a conversation, we're just going to assume it was a racist conversation. So you just keep it going or change the subject. Just keep talking for some reason. Just even if you switch the subject, you cannot stop talking because our brain immediately goes, oh, they were just talking about something racist.
God, your brain's probably not wrong most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
These are the tips you're going to get, new listeners. So, you know, take notes. Yes. Yeah, I'm giving you some. Bring a pen.
Yes.
I mean, unless you just have low self-esteem, in which case you just assume that they're talking about you specifically, that's right. My vibe.
Always a possibility.
Yeah.
Did you at least have good brisket?
Oh, you fucking know I did. I go on an eating tour. I like straight up cancel keto if I go to a city where I want to eat. Okay, let me keep it going. I see Casey sweating because I have been talking way too much. Don't put your hands up, Casey. I see it in your eyes. I see it in your eyes. But today we're talking about Lyle, a movie I'm so excited to discuss. We'll take a quiz on horrified mothers. And of course, as always, we'll have staff picks. But first, it's our time for our new segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? First up is the problem with Netflix. If you haven't been following the ongoing saga involving Netflix and the recent Dave Chappelle comedy special, here's a brief timeline. On October 5th, Netflix releases the latest Dave Chappelle special called The Closer. Basically, the final out of a six special deal they paid Dave Chappelle millions of dollars for. The special includes some very insensitive language regarding trans people and the LGBTQ community. I would say dangerous. I would go as far as say dangerous, but we'll get into that later. When called out by the public and even Netflix employees, Chappelle and Netflix's co-CEO, Ted Sarandos, doubled down on their support of the special and free speech. We'll get on that later too. A walkout of the Netflix office is organized by filmmaker Ashley Marie Preston for Wednesday, October 20th. That's today. As a result of mounting pressure, Netflix releases a statement on Tuesday, October 19th, saying, "We value our trans colleagues and allies and understand the deep hurt that's been caused. We respect the decision of any employee who chooses to walk out and recognize we have much more work to do both within Netflix and in our content." Sarandos also admits that he screwed up, but says he does not consider the comedy special to equate to hate speech. The walkout occurs as planned, and a list of asks is presented to Netflix and Sarandos. Some asks include eliminate references, imagery of Chappelle inside of the workplace, acknowledge that the special causes harm to the trans community and Netflix's responsibility on it, so we keep the conversation around transphobia involving internally, and trans and non-binary content investment. Is this important? Do you care?
Hell yeah, this is important.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, this started coming up last week, and I do want to thank one of our listeners who's been a friend of ours for a long time and often writes on our Facebook group page. Pella Felton brought this up when it sort of first came out and Ted Sarandos made his first asinine comment to it. And I'm really grateful to her for doing that. There's so much here. Part of it, it's a unique thing because it's something that affects the wider world because it involves Netflix's content and what's being put out there and how it's being framed. And I think it's key that one of their other asks is also, they didn't say anything about pulling the special or pulling any of it. They asked for words to be put in front of it saying that there's transphobic content in here that can be harmful to listeners and is, you know, a negative and like if he said a dangerous element. And I think so we get the public side of it, but it's also a workplace issue that there are a lot of people, you know, they're in a unique environment of being a public facing workplace that there's things going out to the public that can make people feel scared and hurt and, you know, not recognized, not valued, not protected in their workplace. And I'm glad that their asks revolved around both of those. And also that the walkout, and like if you said it did happen today, like anything like this, the trans community is a minority. They have to have allied support on this kind of thing. And so it was nice to see, it was a good number of people who came out, and I hope that the support around them grows too.
Yeah, that's something I want to say. Like, it's very interesting, right? Because, you know, as a stand-up, this idea always comes up. But this is a very interesting and unique experience. But I think the first thing I wanted to hit on is exactly what you said. They're not asking for it to be pulled. Everyone online is kind of having this argument as if that's what they're asking for. But in the same way that someone pointed out, in the same way that they immediately switched up 13 Reasons Why, they immediately will toss something in front, it shouldn't be that much of a problem when you have someone talking about and supporting violence against a group of people. Just plain out and simple. I think that's where it really crosses the line for me, when we want to go in this like comedy jokes versus all this stuff. And I didn't see the special. I don't really plan to. I don't need to. I don't care if anybody's like, you gotta see it to do it. I was like, no. I didn't need to see all these like, you know, faces of death videos to know that they're not great. You don't need to see it. And I trust my friends.
Perfect comparison.
And yeah.
I did watch the whole special so that Dave and I could talk about it on LKTV. And it's dire because the whole attitude of it is like, no, you don't understand me. Let me explain it to you again. And it's like, you know,
because he has brought this up before,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like the third or fourth time this has come up. And it's like, you know, he brings up the sort of like bathroom bill stuff, and some guy in the audience goes, yeah. And he goes, no, that's a bad law. And so like for a second you think, oh, okay, maybe he's actually learned something. And then no, he's team turf and like, stop punching down at me and stop, you know, like you can, you know, DaBaby can shoot a black guy in Walmart and not suffer, but you can't hurt a gay person's feelings. And it's like, no, stop it. Dave Chappelle, I thought smarter than this, but apparently not, because you won't drop this topic that nobody asked you to bring up, that nobody forced you to bring up, and you keep coming back to this well and putting more poison in it. And so, it's just depressing to see. And at the end of the special, it's like, well, I'm not talking about this anymore. And it's like, no, you do need to talk about it again after you've actually learned something about trans people and not just spewed out a whole bunch of nonsense, which is what this special is, and not very funny nonsense on top of it.
It's weird as hell when people are like, I need to use my platform to tell you I'm allowed to use my platform to be shitty.
Right?
Like that.
Let me take my fourth Netflix special to tell you how canceled I'm being right now.
Yeah, it's so weird to me also that people can't make the connection between like these words and then bad things that happen to trans people. Like, it's so bizarre to me that it's like, if people are saying this, they're getting people, the others on board with it. And then the hate just festers and then it leads to violence. And I think that's like all the people who are sort of like, this is cancel culture and that's wrong, are really not grasping the difference between, you know, this multimillionaire who's famous all over the world is going to have, you know, a few words in front of his special versus like people are dying. And it's just, I'm happy to see that a lot of people are speaking up about it, but I think that, anything from Netflix feels kind of hollow because they didn't care in the first place. Like, it didn't raise any red flags, and it's very indicative of sort of who's in charge.
That's a great point. One of the other asks they had, in addition to like wanting this, the content investment by trans and non-binary creators, was also something they wanted to see, cultivating talent, growing talent, and also again in the workplace setting. Of it is very clear by their statements they do not have trans executives reading the bullshit they're putting out, because the doubling down of, well, we feel pretty confident that a comedy special is not going to lead to any hurt, is ignorant and also like watch some of your documentaries on your own platform, people. Disclosure's right there. So I think for, I know for us, because we've talked about it as well in terms of supporting the trans community and their allies within Netflix, of I'm just happy to follow their lead of what their next steps are. I think, you know, this walkout was just today, and we'll see how Sarandos and how the company at large responds, because they do have more specific asks now. So if they have any broader things to engage the public to help support, we'll keep you posted and we'll look out. But I am glad. I hate that this is happening. I'm glad that the people getting behind it are being heard for why they're feeling this way, because it's very valid.
Hi, everybody. Producer Casey here. I just wanted to jump in real quick to add on what everybody else was saying. There had been some discussion of what action to take as a result of the ongoing issues with Netflix. And since Netflix and Ted Sarandos appear to be listening to the trans community and seem open to changing, we're not going to boycott or take any further action at this time. But we will be watching the situation very closely, and if none of these changes are carried out and the trans community asks for a boycott, and we then we'll figure out what to do then. But at this time, we're not going to take any further action, and we'll just be watching very closely.
And we'll continue to do what we can with the show to amplify those voices and make sure that more people know that this is a thing that's happening within the corporate culture over there.
I'm sure it'll all be fixed in a week.
Oh, yeah.
The world is great. Nothing ever goes wrong in the world.
As we know, people are really good and quick to change.
Yeah.
They don't need any nudging. You know, they're just
people
ready to go.
People love change. That's the most unifying thing there is.
And admitting they're wrong.
Oh, that's the other thing. They love admitting they're wrong and changing. That's what humans dig. We get people. We get them. You know what I get? I get the hunger for human flesh. How's that? Can I do that? Do you guys, this week, director James Gunn revealed on Twitter that he once attempted to make a Gilligan's Island cannibal movie written by Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Quote, in the late 90s, screenwriting goat Charlie Kaufman pitched a movie version of Gilligan's Island where the islanders, starving and desperate, started killing and eating each other. Warner Brothers wanted to do it, but Sherwood Schwartz, the creator, said no way. After Guardians, I tried to resurrect the idea and wanted to direct. It seemed Warner's and Charlie were interested, but this time the estate of the late Sherwood Schwartz nixed it. Anyway, if the Schwartz estate changes their mind, I'm here. Is this important? Do you care?
Who do they eat first? Lovey or Thurston?
Ooh, how hungry are they?
Oh,
Lovey's not got much meat on those bones.
I think your last one standing is Marianne. She is resourceful.
Yeah, I can see that.
She's the Katniss Everdeen of the SS Minnow.
I, you know what? I would care if it was presented in the style of the original show. Like, if it was still goofy and, like, the whole time Gilligan's just trying to eat people and messing up, and the professor's like, I've grown this meat in a lab made out of coconuts, but then everyone eats him.
You have to keep the music cues.
I feel like that's something James Gunn would do. You know, there's different directors that you could put in with this where it would like just go like full horror movie. But James Gunn loves a sort of weird and then visceral, funny. Yeah, I do like that. I want the bright lighting, that flat studio lighting of Gilligan's Island. And then like Ginger in a dress that like, ooh, it's being cut up the thigh. Oh, it's her thigh's being carved into. Oh, no.
If we could work in the Harlem Globetrotters also, I think that would really bring it home.
Oh my God, Iffy, are you being quiet because you don't freaking know what Gilligan's Island is?
No, I remember Gilligan's Island, and I would love this. I'm just tickled by the fact that the state is like, no, bro, no, we don't want to do this. Leave it alone. It's a fun, we don't want a dark and gritty reboot.
They did two Brady Bunch movies that were like obsessively true to the original, so I could see where they wouldn't be open to futzing around with the IP of Gilligan's Island.
That Sherwood Schwartz's final note of this universe was, do not let them. Let them cannibalize Gilligan's.
Please,
sweet rated G Island.
I have to share my favorite Gilligan's Island theory, and you might have heard this one before, but that each of them represents one of the seven deadly sins.
Ooh.
Oh.
Although I think there's only six of them, so I'm not quite sure how that works, but nonetheless. maybe Ginger is two of them. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or maybe the island is one.
Ooh. Ooh, like
the location itself is a character.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what a novel idea. We're going to take a break, but when we get back, we're going to be talking about Lyle.
Storyblocks makes it possible for creators to keep up with the growing demands for modern video content, so you can bring all your stories to life and stop sacrificing your vision due to time, budget, or resources.
With Storyblocks' unlimited access plan, it gives you unlimited downloads of more than 1 million plus assets in their library. You can try out multiple options quickly and find the perfect fit so you can create more and spend less. Restock is their commitment to increase representation in stock media by hiring creators from marginalized communities to create content that is more reflective of the diverse world that we live in. Stay on budget while telling the best version of your story with the most affordable subscription plans and tools on the market that scale to meet your needs.
So Storyblocks is a great way if you are doing any kind of video project, if it is documentary, if it is a short little funny thing, if it is a long narrative, and you're wanting to build it out, these are great tools for you to have. I encourage people to explore them because knowing how to finesse what you have and give yourself beautiful titling because there's templates that they have, or building out the world that you're in because you can't afford to do big crowd shots and they have them for you and can set the tone, can give you a sense of the city and the time and the place and all things that cost a lot of money if you have to shoot them yourselves and take up time you probably don't have. So yes, I am all for expanding what you're doing with Storyblocks.
Explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/maxfilm. That's storyblocks.com/maxfilm.
Hey there, I'm Ellen Weatherford.
And I'm Christian Weatherford.
And we've got big feelings about animals that we just gotta share.
On Just the Zoo of Us, your new favorite animal review podcast, we're here to critically evaluate how each animal excels and how it doesn't, rating them out of 10 on their effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics.
Guest experts give you their takes informed by actual, real-life experiences studying and working with very cool animals like sharks, cheetahs, and sea turtles.
It's a field trip to the zoo for your ears.
So if you or your kids have ever wondered if a pigeon can count, why sloths move so slow, or how a spider sees the world, find out with us every Wednesday on Just the Zoo of Us, which can now be found in its natural habitat on MaximumFun.org.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Sophie Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Monica Vassandani.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today, we're talking about Lyle. Drea, would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis?
I can do that. It's a brief film, so...
Yeah, it really is.
Synopsis. Yes, it's totally possible. So Lyle is a movie set in an apartment building in New York, a really beautiful apartment building. A young couple is moved in. It's Gabby Hoffman is our lead character, and her wife is played by Ingrid Youngerman. And they have a 2 or 3 year old toddler age daughter named Lyle, and Gabby is pregnant. They're expecting, and they've found this incredible place, and they're so excited to get in there. And you know, nothing bad can ever come with an incredible place that just popped up mysteriously, became available. And during Gabby's pregnancy, an unfortunate accident happens, and they lose Lyle. And in dealing with their grief, and Gabby is still pregnant, She becomes increasingly obsessed with a very strange woman who lives in their building and other ominous elements that she's convinced there's some sort of, be it supernatural or conspiracy or something, that's coming against her and her unborn child. And she is feeling more and more penned in, anxious, and flailing about all of it. How's that? I got a lot of flail from Gabby Hoffman in this one.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. There's a big flail energy. Huge flailings.
Big flail energy.
Yeah.
And this too, like I mentioned, is and I'll say in the synopsis part, it is a very lean. It's like 65, 70 minute film.
62 minutes. It's 62. Shorter than most episodes of The Sopranos.
Yes, 62 tight minutes, but it feels like a feature film. You get like
for sure
that energy of it, and it's the kind of really sparse, ultra low budget filmmaking that I get so excited to talk about. This is like a real festival feeling film, and it's, you know, it's got a rare combination. Like obviously the tagline that everyone would use when it was coming out, oh, it's like the lesbian Rosemary's Baby, which is, you know, I think what all lesbians want to hear about, like, their lives and their families. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that was Super Producers Casey's first question. Is it fair to call this the lesbian Rosemary's Baby as it was billed upon the release of the film?
I don't know if real estate plays a major role in most New York City horror movies, but certainly in these two, it does, you know, and there is this notion of like you have the spouse who has artistic ambitions and who is suddenly becoming very successful, and the pregnant spouse who is not only like feeling abandoned and alienated because, you know, their partner is out being famous and succeeding all the time, but also like feeling more and more like there's this tight grip of, like you said, some sort of conspiracy or some sort of energy that's going on. And, you know, I think both films kind of play into the idea of like, you know, are these just hormones or is there really this larger thing that's out to get me here? And can I make anyone believe that this isn't just hormones? Is anybody going to, you know, when a pregnant woman is in the middle of the street screaming and crying, is anybody going to be like, oh, let's listen to what she has to say? Or is it just, oh, tut, tut, you're just, you know, having contractions or something. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's an inevitable comparison, but I think this movie operates in a very, as sort of borderline Baroque as Rosemary's Baby is, this is almost like naturalist, which is really unusual for a horror movie. Like you don't see anything. It's all suggested and implied.
Yeah. I have a question for Monica, because out of those of us here, you're the one who has a wife and a child, maybe more than one. And so for me, there's something I do find, like with friends of mine who have kids, that pregnancy, there's this dismissal of women's a dismissal of how they're reacting, because it's put under this blanket of, oh, you have baby brain or pregnancy hormone, which are very real, sure.
Yeah,
you're growing a human, but it's, I've watched it in action of people be dismissive of my friends, and I'm like, again, she's growing a human. How dare you just talk like what she's saying is insignificant because it must be her addled brain. Is that, was there anything recognizable to you with that construct?
I mean, when my wife was pregnant, she hated the smell of water. So like she would constantly complain that the clean dishes smelled like water. So like I get that. Like, but
that's, I think, such a good detail.
I think that, like, if you are like screaming and like, I don't know, running in the middle of the street, and I feel like that stuff you can't really write off, but
yeah,
it makes sense though. It tracks then that, oh, everybody's in on it, and that's why they're not paying attention, because it felt like their reaction was, you know, a little bit too chill about, you know, whatever Gabby Hoffman was going through.
Because, yeah, she was having real big, like, swings in terms of, it is one of my favorite details, the woman who's their neighbor, who is, like, the landlady, the one who shows them the apartment, the landlady, She's fantastic. She's like 60. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just going to be this throwaway joke, but she says this comment to Gabby's character when they're moving in of like, oh, you're pregnant. I'm trying right now as well. And you're like, oh, that's funny. Like, it reminded me of Sigourney Weaver and Baby Mama, who runs that like agency of the insemination agency. And then that turns out to be a thing that she's like haunted by this woman, and she sees her like looking sort of third trimester pregnant, like looking very big and like talking about lactating and all this. And she again is at least 60 years of age on this planet. And so there's things with that that I was like, oh, that was a nice little crumb to drop and have it be like, this woman is messing with me. But also it makes it believable that you're like, she's not messy.
But then it turns out that she's the red herring. And it's like, oh, you just have an insane landlady. She's not part of this at all.
It's a great red herring. She cops to it. Yeah.
The fact that June didn't think that was like noteworthy at all made me hate her before she started being terrible. Because I just think about like if I were in that situation, I would hope that my partner would be like, yeah, that's insane, and like laugh with me about it. But the idea that someone is just like, yeah, whatever, like that's the red flag.
So you're already on, you're like, something's up with you.
I do have questions, because the other thing that I noticed in looking this up, like I said, super low budget, a lot of just this one location, very stripped down, a lot of things. And then I read that they shot in like 5 days. And if you are not a movie maker, let me explain to you, like I did a very low budget film in like 14 days, which felt like we were all going to die. Like it was so much. And that had like more moving parts, but that is so much. And the level of performance you're getting, especially from Gabby Hoffman, who this is anchored on, the idea of her being able to crank it up to 10 like that, like, okay, well, we have, let's see, 18 minutes in this setup. So Gabby, can you start breaking down right now? Can we just get a full level 11 of tears and then a real panicked breathing? Action. Like it's insane. The filmmaking that's being pulled off here to me was so impressive.
Gabby Hoffman is so great. And this was she was having this moment where she was like in all of this stuff. This was when Transparent was on the air and there were like a handful of other like indies that were happening. And I was just like, man, it's the year of Gabby Hoffman. Like and she's a lifer. You know, she's somebody who was acting as a kid. You know, am I wrong in thinking that her mother is Viva of the Warhol Superstars? I want to say that would be
incredible. Yeah, I bet Casey will tell us.
So, but you know, but just she's just this extraordinary performer, and this is like, yeah, Dre, like you said, this is such a zero to 1,000 kind of role in what's demanded of her, and it's always believable, it's always tenable, and she's just riveting, and you know, she's in pretty much every shot of the film, and she's amazing.
Yeah, and Alonso, you're right.
Yeah,
this makes sense. Of course, she has some Warhol lineage in there. I do like you describing her as a lifer, but that's the other thing too. In supporting Stuart Thorndike, who directed this, who I know at the time she was dating Ingrid Jungerman. I'm not sure if they're still together. Ingrid's also a filmmaker.
Yes.
And this is the kind of thing, like, you have to put so much trust in your director's hands for something. Well, for anything you're doing, but something like this of, especially thinking of like, okay, there's not going to be much crew around. It's going to be a stripped down equipment. Someone's holding a camera in your face. Now we need you to freak out on the street like you have never freaked out before. Like, there's so much trust that you have to
build.
And
if it rains, we're shooting it in the rain because we got 5 days.
Yes. 5 days. Again, we had 16 minutes budgeted for this outdoor shot in snow. Yeah.
Monica, I was wanting to ask you, like, is there, I don't even know how to like phrase this, the notion of like with when lesbian couples are having a kid, is there a difference in the way that friends or family member treat the person carrying the child versus the person not carrying the child? Because obviously in male-female couples, that's sort of a given. And, you know, gay male couples will have like a surrogate or closed adoption. Mm-hmm. But, you know, lesbian couples, y'all are doing the whole thing. But it's like, well, you're both women, but really only one of you is, you know, doing it, even though obviously the you're mom, both being mom. Parents, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so my wife carried our son. And so sometimes I get like credit for, I get more credit than what I've done, because I think people sort of default to like, oh, you're a mom, you've like been through a lot or whatever. And, I had nothing to do with it. I didn't like, like I was there, but I didn't even participate in, you know, the conception. So it's, you know, there is definitely that, where like there's kind of a little gray area, but I think it's just people don't know how to approach it rather than like making a meaningful choice either way. I think that, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about this approach to a queer film is that it wasn't about that. Like, it wasn't about their queerness. And I think that that is so important. It wasn't like a whole thing about like, oh, who's, you know, who's carrying the baby? And then what does that make you more of the dad? Like, I think that they just both fell into sort of these very natural roles that sort of made sense of like the person who's pregnant is not working because they are pregnant. So, yeah, like I enjoyed how that was approached here.
I liked that as well, that it was, there is the, again, my favorite, the landlady makes this horrifyingly awkward joke because there's a model apartment in the same thing.
Oh,
and she's
yeah.
like, oh, you guys will love that because they're hot women. I was like, yes, this is the best moment ever. Keep talking, landlady. You can't go wrong. But that was it. Like, it was not like a story point from there. That was honestly just set up to introduce us to the models because we get to know one of them later.
Right.
And that it was, it's that thing of, sure, this was made by a queer woman. And that's that kind of perspective that shifts thing. We don't need to linger for a long time to see like, how would a family function? Like, how does any family function? It just functions until one of them is revealed to be diabolical.
Yeah, that's just kind of like the beauty of just having, you know, queer people make queer films for queer people, because, you know, if it's like this cishet dude, it's like, it's so interesting, these two women, they're having babies, let's like, so we gotta focus on that, and we gotta like, you know, have a whole exposition that explains. It's like, no, it's just a part of life, let's get into the creepy stuff and this weird GeoCities website that's haunted.
That website.
Oh man, that was vintage.
Yeah, that fucked me up. So Alonzo, this kind of leads me to want to ask like this general question, since we are doing like Queer Horror Month and you have seen lots of movies in your life and you've got to kind of see the growth in it. How do you feel queer horror has changed from like when you first kind of like saw it to your like Wes Cravens to like now?
You better start this with, in my day.
Well, no, I mean, I'll tell you, to be honest, you know, when I first came out in like the late 80s and early 90s, and I was sort of going to the local video store that had a gay and lesbian section and just devouring everything they had, there was really not any horror in there that I can remember that was being featured very prominently. So, you know, I think as with anything else, I'm all about representation and in all the places. So if now like you can turn on Hulu and see like, you know, gay serial killers run amok on New Year's Eve, or like, you know, lesbian vampires or whatever else, like, great. I mean, because again, it's like no one is looking to horror necessarily as like a reflection of the real world. It's a commentary on the real world. And it's you know, we may not deal with the same minutiae that people in horror movies deal with, but horror movies are saying something about the world that we live in and that we recognize and that we are forced to deal with. And so putting queer characters in that context just affirms that we are human beings and part of society and not just these people over in that place somewhere that is not me or my life or anything I ever have to think about.
I love that. That's the perfect example, too, of how it's incidental that they're queer, because mm-hmm. the commentary in this movie is mm-hmm. nothing about their sexuality. And it is like there is commentary to be found here. And like it is one of my favorite things about horror in general is it's rich with metaphor. You guys yeah. know I love a good metaphor. Vote, mm. vote.
All right.
Vote.
Yeah, yeah. It's time to vote. Let's get it. So the way we vote here, Monica, is we say screen it. That's the highest praise. Stream it is the middle ground, and skip it is self-explanatory. So, you know, to kick things off, as our guest, we'll let you give us the first rating. I don't know. I'm
Words are your choice.
My heart radio just turned off the pod.
Damn it, we lost our award.
Yeah,
I'd say stream it. I mean, it's an hour. That's a short for a film. I think it was a great watch, kind of up until the end, like Drea said, where that last bit I feel like could have used a little bit more weight to it. It felt like here's the ending, but I wanted to like live in that for a second. But yeah, it's worth a stream for sure.
Yeah, I would say screen it mainly just for Gabby Hoffman's performance and the movie. I think the best thing it has in common with Rosemary's Baby is that sense of the like slowly tightening vice, you know. And it just it I think, you know, you're right. The ending could have been fleshed out a little more and maybe like felt like more of a coda. But overall, I feel like the film is constantly just like upping the dread factor and making you more and more uncomfortable and more like, what is even happening? And why does this all feel like, ugh? And so, I do enjoy that tension, but it is streaming in a ton of places, including my beloved Canopy, but also Shudder and AMC Plus, and it's all over the place.
Yeah. I would be a screen it. I think this is a solid film. And by that, I mean, you can stream it and watch it that way. But I think this is well worth the time. I think it's a great example of really smart low budget filmmaking that's packed with style, and yet it's not frillery. It's just within the storytelling and how it's being put together. And yeah, Gabby's amazing in it, and she gives it her all, and it really is. There's something about the lo-fi quality of it that actually lends itself to feeling more immediate, that it feels, if this had been like beautifully shot or beautifully, it was the same exact story, I'd feel a little disconnect, but there's something about watching it. It looks like it was shot on a phone half the time. It doesn't look bad.
But
at
you
all.
Know, you're not in a soundstage. Like they yeah, had you know, that apartment like, for this, a week.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Like this could be happening. Yeah. And yeah, I think it's just really fun. Clever filmmaking. By fun, I don't mean it's like what a giggle riot.
A day lark.
Yeah. It is a psychological thriller that I think people will dig. Iffy.
Yeah, you know, it's a screen, a nice little spooky movie. It's short and it doesn't get too scary, which is the highest praise for me for a thriller. But yeah, no, it's I agree with everyone, mostly because as someone who like really enjoys world building, I really would like to really explore like the ins and outs of that. So yeah, I wanted more juice, you know, but I like the juice that I got. It was, the ending is so very visceral. And just the last shot before it goes to black, you're like, oh, okay.
There's an action scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now I feel like a bitch for saying stream it, but I stand by it.
No, stand by.
There's no pleasing the lesbians.
Yes, not at all. Look, you do what you feel is right. Don't ever feel swayed by us.
We need that integrity.
Yes. We'll be back right after a short break.
Video games.
Video games.
Video
games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, and in the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Monica Vasandani,
Drea Clark.
And since we're so close to Halloween and the movie we just discussed is about motherhood, we're going to take a quiz on horrified mothers. Producer Casey, tell us the rules.
Hi, back again with another quiz. Good to be here. Okay, so this is a quiz on horrified mothers. We will split everybody up into two teams. So we'll have Ify and Alonzo v. Drea and Monica. That's okay with your teammate, Ify and Alonzo. You okay being on the same team?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So for this, you'll buzz in to answer a question. And so we need a buzz-in word. Does anyone have a buzz-in word we can use?
Mommy.
Mommy. Okay, so the buzz-in word is mommy. Alonzo and Ify, do you have a team name?
How about Oedipus Rex, W-R-E-C-K-S?
Oh, my okay. God.
Oedipus Rex, very like good, very good. And then Drea and Monica, do you have a team name?
Does it have to be Greek in origin?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be.
Manic Panic for Ooh. Monica's hair color.
Yeah, I like
very
it.
Very good. So
that's
your
that
team
brand,
name
right?
Is,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
That's a brand, yeah.
It all brand.
Yeah.
You're like, how dare you? I have couture hair, lady.
She's using the good stuff, Drea, but yeah. Fine, whatever.
Okay, so if you get the answer wrong, the other team can steal. Those are all the rules. Does this all make sense?
Sure. So you ask a question. If we know the answer, we yell, mommy, you tell us which one of us said it first.
That's correct.
Okay. I've had this Here dream, by the way.
Drea, I need to Here apologize we go. Ahead yes. of time.
Oh. You're gonna be great.
Okay, here we go. Number one. In this film, Jennifer Lawrence's sink is not being
mommy.
Braced.
Do you have to Alonzo. Finish the question? Oh, shit. I thought we had to let you finish the
oh,
question.
Oh, sorry. Mother! Exclamation point.
That is correct. Yeah, henceforth, let me finish the question.
Okay. Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry. That was that one counts. Henceforth,
and
let me finish the question. Okay, here we go. Number two. The mother in this film should worry more about her daughter's violent psychokinetic abilities rather than her dirty pillows.
Mommy.
Drea.
Carrie?
Yes, that is correct. Very good. It's tied 1-1. Here we go. In this David Cronenberg film, Samantha Egger wants to see her son, and a horde of violent, bizarre-looking mutant children are doing their best to help her and kill anyone who gets in their way.
Mommy.
Alonzo.
The Brood.
That's correct.
Nice.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
Have you has anyone else seen The Brood?
Mm-mm.
No.
Oh, phenomenal.
Good stuff.
His first masterpiece.
Ooh, I'm Casey. I love Cronenberg so much.
I do. Okay, here we go. In this film, Essie Davis can't seem to keep the scary fancy man away from her son.
Mommy.
Mommy, goddamn it.
Alonzo.
The Babadook.
I yelled the
yes.
name of the movie.
All right. Alonzo and Ify, Oedipus Rex, you guys are winning 3-1. Okay, here we go. This film is about a travel agent mother who really should speak to someone about her son because he is frightening and strange and loves archery.
Mommy.
Alonzo.
We need to talk about Kevin.
That's correct. Wow.
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 Wow. Monica, I'll apologize to you now.
You know what? At least we're both doing an equal amount of work.
We
so
are
I like
in
that.
This together.
Parity is important.
All right, here we go. The mother in this film thought it would be a good idea to buy her son a good guy doll for Christmas. He was, in fact, not a good guy.
Mommy?
Mommy?
Ify.
Child's Play.
That's right.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Yeah.
Very
nice. Also, can something. We just get on a loop? Monica going, Mommy? Mommy?
That's my new ringtone.
All right. Here's a question this mother in this film was probably asking herself. Why are all these strangers at my mother's funeral? And why are all these naked elderly people in my house?
I have no idea.
I'll ask this again. Here's a question this mother in this film was probably asking herself. Why are all these strangers at my mother's funeral? And why are all these naked elderly people in my house?
Mommy.
Alonzo.
Hereditary.
That's correct.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
I was like, it was too specific. Like, what I was seeing was not that movie.
Yeah. I was thinking of one of those, like, 70s horror movies with Sylvia Miles, and then I was like, oh, no. Okay.
I honestly was too hung up trying to figure out if this was Cocoon. I was like, does someone, is there a funeral in Cocoon? Do they take their kid off? What's happening?
Unfortunately, that was the one that I was like, I know this one. Like, in my head, I'm like, at least I know Hereditary, and I'll get that, but I didn't.
Yeah, see, that's how Casey gets you. You know, he comes up, he tries to do this tricky dicky stuff.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
All right, here we go. Moving on. A 16th century European tyrant named Viggo the Carpathian really wants Sigourney Weaver's baby in this movie.
Mommy.
Alonzo.
Ghostbusters 2.
That's correct. Two. Ghostbusters 2. Wow. Iffy, have you seen Ghostbusters 2?
Yeah, because Sigourney Weaver looks very hot in that movie.
True.
But I totally, for some reason, as soon as I heard Sigourney Weaver, I was like, Alien. Alien.
Yes, you know, remember, I was thinking Viggo about the Carpathian and Alien.
Yes. Well, remember.
Honestly, you could talk me into that being real. So I'm not even fully mocking.
Because in Alien, you know, she's technically a mother. That's the whole thing.
Yes, I was trying to figure out. That did cross my mind, but I couldn't quite put it together.
Okay. Adoptive parents.
Yes.
Well, that's Aliens, actually, where Newt shows up.
Jesus.
Well, Sigourney Weaver's kind of a mother to a cat.
There is that.
Yeah, we count.
Fur baby.
Okay. This mother's diary entry probably went something like this. I have to communicate with my daughter through the static in the television because she's been kidnapped by some ultra-dimensional demonic life form that's taken root in my house.
Mommy.
Iffy.
Poltergeist.
Very good, Iffy. God. Very good.
Had a whistle on that, too.
That was good. Okay. Last question here.
Ooh, this is it, Monica.
Yeah, we got this.
We got this shit.
Okay, this is a 2-point question. Okay? So you have to name the character and the movie. Here we go. Guess who this mother is? I am dead and my son likes to dress up like me. Also, we own a motel.
Mommy.
That was me. I swear that was me. God damn it.
The movie is Psycho. The mother is Mrs. Bates. The character who dresses like her is Norman Bates.
Very good. We'll accept that. Well, Oedipus Rex, it was a squeaker, but you guys won on that one.
Are you sure?
Well done. That is all. You win. What would be a good prize for winning this quiz?
I would like to think that we would be taken out to a nice brunch once a year.
Nice.
Sure, that would be
nice.
Perfect. All right, that's it.
Solid dismount to Casey.
I know, he's out of here.
With that game.
Yeah, I guess if he just dipped out of here like that, I guess we'll just go on to staff picks. It can be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you start?
All right, so I have a documentary this week that is currently in theaters and on Apple Plus called The Velvet Underground.
Yeah, yeah.
It is not horror, but it is definitely queer. It is by director Todd Haynes, that many of you know from his narrative work. It's a really interesting musical doc because it is not the sort of VH1 behind the music structure you may be used to of like, oh, I'm excited to learn. How did the Velvet Underground come together and what? No. This is much more like, get a sense of the time and the space. Feel what the world was like when this weird ass music that influenced all these people was being made. And I really like that artistic entryway to the Velvet Underground, and it seems particularly fitting for this band. So it is, like I said, available theatrically, and if you have Apple Plus or know someone who does and wants to give you their login.
All right. Darren, I guess, Alonzo, you want to hop in there?
Sure. Well, first of all, I have some good news for Drea. Only Murders in the Building ended this week, so now you can binge it.
Girl, did I watch it so that I could catch up and watch the last one last night? I did.
Nice.
Well, I time my binges. I time it.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, listen, if there are folks out there who you're done with season one of Only Murders in the Building and you're dying for more true crime podcast related content, and after watching Lyle, you want more Ingrid Jungerman, I have a movie for you. Ooh. Her film Women Who Kill, which she stars in and wrote and directed, and it's about a lesbian couple who have a true crime podcast. Actually, it's a woman and her ex. And of course, they get inveigled into other potentially homicidal shenanigans, and it's funny, and it's a thriller, and it's really terrific. And so it just seemed like the perfect thing to drop into this week, given all the cross-cutting themes that we're working with. So yeah,
that's some nice supportive programming right there, Alonzo.
Yep, thank you very much.
Yeah.
So yeah, Women Who Kill, streaming in a bunch of places, including IMDb TV, which is a thing.
Oh, there's always a new thing. Yeah. It feels like. All right. What about you, Monica?
I'm going to go classic with Bound. You know, it's probably the first like lesbian movie I saw. And I was like, oh, there are others. So it's by the Wachowskis, of course, from Matrix fame. This was their directorial debut. It's just a fun kind of like crime thriller, like sort of Bonnie and Clyde vibes, but two women, and it's very, very 90s. The fashion is impeccable. And it is a little kind of silly at times, and it feels a little over the top, but it's such a great, just a fun watch. I don't know where it's available. It is totally Googleable though.
And Lily Wachowski actually tweeted today in support of the Netflix walkout. So everything comes together.
That's dope.
Oh, hey, Bound is on Hulu and Paramount Plus.
Tight.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm doing that fun thing we do every now and then where I alley-oop my staff pick to support a friend. And my friend Fiona Nova has made a short called The Laundromat off of Malibu. And, you know, it'll be screening Thursday, November 4th. I think it might be an online screening. If you go to her Twitter, Fiona Nova, you can get more deets on that. She worked real hard, kickstarted it, and was real excited to do it. So I'm real excited to see her do it, if that makes any sense. If not, I'm sorry. But yeah, it's a fun thriller movie. It seems a little creepy and she's real hyped. And it's always fun seeing friends jump into that indie film game because, you know, it's fun. You get to meet Drea. She's great. Alonzo might put your queer film in the Outfest. It's good time. Specifically Alonzo. Only Alonzo.
Only Alonzo.
You got to go through him to get it.
And anybody who's ever made an indie film has had to meet Drea. So,
yes. Of course.
She decides yes or no for everything.
Yeah, yeah. She stands like style. Caesar. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you get your thumb in the middle and then you go up or down. So
I'm like, maybe? Oh, my gosh, no.
Yeah. No, honey, thanks.
No, thank you, no.
There it is, the Queen of the Midwest on her throne, looking down at us in the gladiator pits where we're throwing film
canisters.
Watch it, please. All right, thank you, Monica, for being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
You know what? I guess just follow me on Twitter. At Monica Vass. You could also follow me on Instagram if you want to see pictures of my boy. That's mostly what it is right now. But that's all I've got for now. So, thank you for having me here.
Thanks for being here.
Anytime. All right. And, you know, look, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. Or you can send us an electronic mail at maximumfilm at MaximumFun.org. Our producer is the wonderful, esteemed, always got good hats, rarely wears berets, Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is the none other, the wonderful Kevin Ferguson. And of course, y'all already know, this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.